Raj, you ready?
Yeah.
Okay, let's go. All right, so good morning.
Good morning.
Louder, louder. Me, louder? Wow. Okay, so like, can you hear me? Can you hear me now? Okay, all right. Good morning. Excellent. How is everybody doing this morning? Very good. What's that? Woo, all right. Ready for Bon Jovi tonight?
Yeah.
Awesome. Okay, all right. Okay, well, to get us started this morning, welcome to this presentation of How United Uses Taxonomy to Drive Procurement. I'm Denise Wilson, Senior Manager of Enterprise Collaboration Services.
I'm Raj Nachimuthu, SharePoint Solutions Architect.
Excellent. Thank you, Raj. Okay, so who is United Airlines? United Airlines is the world's leading airline. We have the most passenger seat miles and destinations. We have over 5,500 flights per day, and we serve 378 global airports. We have over 85,000 employees. This is a picture of the Boeing 787 cockpit. Brand new aircraft that we ordered 8 years ago, right? So we've been waiting for, so you know when you get a new car, it's like that new plane smell. It's just high tech, everything is brand new. Big windows, nice, open, quiet, smooth. I got to ride on this on its second day of operation last Monday. It's beautiful aircraft. I can't wait for you guys to be able to fly it. It's really, really nice. So we do have a global operation to coordinate. These are those 378 cities. And it's a very dynamic operation to coordinate because these red lines represent new routes. So for example, Denver to Tokyo is going to be a new route that's served by the 787. And fun fact, we serve 10 cities in Japan. So it's a very dynamic, diverse operation to coordinate. For example, during Hurricane Sandy, we had to cancel hundreds of flights. And so we have to then, when we can start operations again, reposition aircraft, crews, fuel, all that. So not only is it dynamic, in terms of business, we have to respond to the market where people want to fly. We have to respond operationally to volcanic ash or hurricanes or weather. So anyway, it's very dynamic business. So SharePoint helps us do that. So a little bit about United. We do fly to airports on 6 continents from 11 hubs. And in 2011, United carried more traffic than any other airline in the world and operated more than 2 million flights. So who drove here to Vegas for this conference? Raise your hand. Drove? Who flew? Okay. So 2 million flights, just like you were on to get here. 2 million flights, 142 million passengers. That's stats from 2011. And United took delivery of the first 2 of 5 new Boeing 787 Dreamliners that we expect to receive this year. And in total, we have ordered 50 of this beautiful new aircraft. And there it is. It is outstanding. I mean, high tech. These little antennas that you see, those are for the in-flight services, such as wireless in-flight and DirecTV and things like that. There are the big windows. Smooth, beautiful ride. Okay, so we have leading edge technologies in aviation and environmental. We are the first U.S. airline to fly the 787, which is 20% more fuel efficient than any other aircraft. We are testing biofuel-powered aircraft, and we're using SharePoint for global environmental compliance. And this is a multi-million dollar return on investment for us for that global environmental compliance. We are leading edge in computing as well. We have SharePoint 2010, internal and external facing enterprise content management farms. In fact, 20% of the content on united.com comes from SharePoint. And we do have an externally facing SharePoint 2010 site called unitedhub.com. Check it out. And it is an externally facing site for information for our customers and feedback from our customers. We are early adopters of that leading edge technology. We are in the SharePoint 2013 Rapid Deployment Program, and we're in the Windows 8, Server 2012, and System Center 2012 technical adoption programs. So how did we get started with SharePoint at United? In 2001, we used SharePoint Portal Server for project documents. And we used this, it was a workhorse, it was reliable, and we used this actually up until just a couple years ago when we migrated those documents to the enterprise platform. In 2007, we started with Microsoft Office SharePoint Server for one targeted application. This was SharePoint, my boss gave me SharePoint 2007 on a DVD, 1,000 Word documents and a server, and said, see what you can do with this, right? So we created the Architectural Review Committee to determine if we're flying to a new airport like Oslo, how many servers and workstations, how many flights per day, all of that. I'll talk about that in a minute. In 2008, the legal department came to us and they said, hey, this is great. Can we take this to the enterprise and make it a platform for e-discovery and enterprise content management? So we did that. In 2010, with the merger of United Airlines and Continental Airlines, we expanded this to the whole United Airlines community and upgraded to 2010 and established this as a tier one application with SharePoint 2010 farms and two data centers. In 2012, this year, we are developing applications on SharePoint 2013. These are applications for production. It's a proof of concept right now, but it's planned for production very quickly. And social is a huge, important direction for United, and we'll talk about that and our direction for 2013 and social. Okay, enterprise content management. There's the man behind the curtain. So enterprise content management, ECM, what is it? Right. So some of the fundamental principles, like I mentioned, we've been doing ECM since 2007, and we started with the targeted application. So some of the fundamental principles are, I like to say, drop-downs promote standardization. If it's not on the drop-down, the user can't select it, right? So you can give the user a list of things to choose from, and you give them the default, what you think that they need to select, and then if they know better, and users often know better about the document, you give them the option to change it. So, and this guides the users what to do, right? So how do you decide what's on the drop-down list? So I would tell you that in your company, you have a lot of documents that you can, a lot of sources that you can use to start this process, right? So our company has a legal record retention policy, and this corresponds one-to-one with the content types. And so we have, for example, aircraft records. Someone owns that, we have to keep it for a certain amount of time. That's a content type, right? So standardize, automate, and make it flexible. So what is a taxonomy? It's a list of lists, and this list can include the locations for your users to put the content, right? A list of cities, a list of document types. It's a list of lists. Okay, governance. This is so critical, so crucial to ECM. It's the key to an effective ECM strategy. You have to have governance at every step of the way. Can you buy governance off the shelf in a box? Can you? No, you can't. It's a process. It's structure, it's tools, it's you know, it applies to your business, right? Okay, so small scale, you do it manually, right? When this was a server under my desk, I had two people ask me for the same URL for their site, and e-service, the kiosk in the airport where you check in, and I said, Jared, marketing, and Sherry, technology, are you working on the same thing? Yes, they were. Lo and behold, they're now collaborating on that one site and not creating two towers, two silos, right? So I would encourage you, and I've heard this in several sessions so far, even with the new tools we have in 2013, don't allow unstructured self-site provisioning. Sites have to go on a list for management. What type of site it is, who owns it, who's responsible for the content, you need that, right? So you can automate that, and we're going to talk about that in a second, but if you'll create where point where it's unstructured and people can't find things, and so your org chart structure, the list of projects, you have to that's governance, where you're aware of what's going on and you're structuring it. Also give your users guidelines and training and materials, help them help you, right? And auditing, you have to check in and see what they're doing once in a while. You have tools to do that, or you can just do it manually, and they will surprise you. The users at United have just created some amazing things, and they didn't have to wait for the technology department to do it. They're out there creating great things. At large scale, so at small scale, make it manual. At large scale, you can automate it using site provisioning, application feature statement. enabling. Set the default content types in your libraries, and if, for example, we tag our sites with site code and so that you have, and division and department, for example, so that you have a Word document that has three pieces of metadata that the user hasn't had to do anything, right? So, and then they can add more if they want or change it. So this guides them and it helps them help you manage all that content. Okay, so Foundations in 2007, like I mentioned, what is ECM? AIM tells us that ECM is an ongoing and evolving strategy for maximizing how your content is to be used. Now, you don't have to eat, how do you eat an elephant? One bite at a time. You don't have to, you know, do a huge binder and figure out everything before you start. Start small, right? Pick one scope of application, like our architectural review committee, and start there and then build it up one scope or system at a time. Okay. And ECM is business-centric, like we talked about. The things that define aviation or your business are the same between versions of SharePoint. Things that define aviation, so the list of cities that we fly to, the list of aircraft types that we have, are the same between SharePoint 2007 and 2010 and 2013. Once established, those enterprise content types are mostly consistent between versions of SharePoint. Now, ECM is your language of your business. SharePoint gives us a cost-effective tool, a mechanism to manage that process because it's flexible. So our 2007 content types that we established took us 2 months to establish about 30 enterprise content types, contract, project document. We just imported those during our 2010 upgrade, and we'll do the same for 2013. So I love this picture, right? So here's all your content in your corporation, your enterprise, and you have to put it into shoeboxes, right? Virtual shoeboxes. So your taxonomy is the business vocabulary. The managed term sets are your technical structure behind that. So, for example, this is your list of sites. So Poughkeepsie, Chicago, this is your list of document types. This is different things. And how do you nest those virtual shoeboxes and guide your users as to which, you know, shoebox to put it in? So this is, again, scope, right? This is site collection level scope, our architectural review committee. And again, we have a list of lists in our taxonomy. We have a list of artifacts of the design process. So opening that new airport in Oslo, how many servers and workstations. We have 8 objects, a design proposal summary, and it has a parts list, right? And then we have an engineering work order for network systems, voice systems. And so each one of those is a content type. And a content type is what? A list of columns, right? Project number, project manager, whatever. And then it has a template, a Word document that the engineer has to fill out, and there's a workflow per object who reviews it. So we defined 8 of these objects, and we started there. And that was a very successful small-scale scope to start with. That's ECM, but just for that site collection level scope. So groupings. Categorize what you have. You will find that you have a lot to start with at your own company. At the farm level, your enterprise content types and site columns, keep this number small, because if the user is presented with 1,600 items on a dropdown, you know what they're going to do? Select the default or nothing at all, right? So give them something that they can manage and that you can manage. This is for records and content management across your whole company. You classify your documents, your files, and you put them in those virtual shoeboxes. Start with your legal record retention policy or things that you already have in your company. Work with each group on their metadata list. For example, we have aircraft types, locations, contract types, and only create that centralized metadata for what's common to the enterprise, like an engineering work order. Would marketing need that? Probably not, right? So why would you put that up at the farm level? You keep that down at the engineering level. Okay, so SharePoint gives us tools to manage that taxonomy, right? So enhancements in 2010 are centralized managed metadata service. Yay, that's huge, because in 2007, we had our content types, and we had to programmatically copy them from site collection to site collection. Now we have MMS, and the term sets in MMS can be scoped to the site collection or to the farm level, right? And in 2013, the story gets even better because FAST is fully integrated. This gives us refiners and it's what our product catalog project that we're gonna show you is based on, content by search, which is a very important web part that's new to 2013. The product catalog template, which is what we use to build service catalog. Now, I'll take this opportunity to distinguish. We call our project in United Airlines service catalog because that's what we called it before. The template in SharePoint 2013 is the product catalog. So we have service catalog at United, and we use the product catalog template. So we'll just reiterate that later when we're showing it. And the catalog connection, because basically the catalog connection is what connects your products list, it's a SharePoint list, to the term set, right? Okay, so United Airlines Technology Service Catalog, built in 2013. So what are some of the benefits of the service catalog to United? It reduces the cost. Products can be entered by an administrative resource as opposed to a developer. We get faster time to market. It reduces the time to enter an item into the catalog from 2 months to hours. Ease of adoption. We're interfacing with an existing back-end asset tracking database via web services. And we have integrated authentication. This is built on Active Directory. We don't have to create an account for you to use Service Catalog. You're in AD already, and that's synchronized with the HR systems. So we know who your manager is. We know who your division controller is for finance and all that. So what parts of 2013 did we use for this project? We used the product catalog template, which comes with the product content type, and display templates, which Raj is going to tell us about. We did import data, like just a CSV file of our existing service catalog data, into a SharePoint list. And we're using this as a single site collection. Raj is going to tell us how you can use this across multiple site collections, but for our products list and our catalog connected term set, we put that into one site collection. We do have a custom shopping cart and to get that internet facing shopping experience, and we use web service calls to connect to that back end database. So let's get right into it. Do we have internet connectivity? I don't think we do. Okay, that's fine. So, nothing up my sleeve, we created a little video. Okay, so, there it is. All right, so, this is the United catalog. This is the term set. We have hardware, software, data services, service desk, help desk tickets, employee services, and so this is the terms. So clicking on hardware, you can now drill down. You have accessories, desktops, laptops, so we're going to select laptops, and then we're going to select an item and add it to the cart. We can browse it, so users can navigate to it. They can search for a product that they're looking for, a product or service that they're looking for. We're going to go ahead and add that to the cart. It's in the cart. And we're going to outline what each of these web parts are for you in just a second. And then it's in the cart. And we're going to go ahead and check out, place the order. And then it's on its way to you. Okay. All right, so, and you can see between here and here, this popular items web part right here, that's a cool new feature of SharePoint 2013. I mean, all of this is new to 2013, but these are web parts, and so we're going to outline those for you now, but you can see that, you know, it's not there, and then, so this is the evolution of our building this. So the first web part is the search box, right? So this is an out-of-the-box web part, and you just type in the text of the item that you're looking for. This is a new request web part. This is a content editor web part that we just have hyperlinks to, you know, the start page for things that our employees would expect to see, an iMac, a project, things that we're familiar with. And then this, of course, is the popular items web part, which is out of the box with 2013. And this is based on the analytics engine. And we're going to show you how easy it is to configure this to sort of drive what items, how do you define popular, right? So so we're going to show you how to configure that. So this page is, we're in our term set now, right? So this is the first level of the term set, hardware, software. These are terms or categories. This is the second level of the term set. We're child terms and subcategories. This is a page with a custom web part, and it's based on the current taxonomy context to iterate through the term set, right? So, and here's something cool. In the keynote, they talked about the friendly URLs. You can see right here it says hardware. So this item context is based on the taxonomy node from the friendly URL, and this is the term hardware right here. So you can see that this is everything under the term hardware. So now we're getting into the really cool stuff, and these are display templates. And this is so this is a list of the items under laptops. So you can see the friendly URL down here. It says laptops, right? So how do you build this page? You define your result scope. You drop in that cool content search web part. That web part gets its items from the search index, and the results are filtered on the current term context, meaning laptops, and products with images, which is our content type, right? So if you don't filter it on the content type, it'll show you pages and everything else. So you can, you know, with a GUI, select how you want to configure that filter for the result set. So this is a catalog target page, and it's catalog product hierarchy ASPX, and so that's how this page was built. Now, this is an important concept, so on this next page, we're going to show you each item. This is a view of the same page. That's a display template, right? So that's rendering that item in the template. That's a display template, right? And those are, this is the list of items, and the properties are surfaced through the search index. These are managed properties, and that's a very important concept that Raj is going to tell us about. But those have to be managed properties, and at the central admin level to be anything like refiners or lookups or things like that. So Raj is going to tell us about that. This is level 4. This is the item itself. So this is the list item from the SharePoint list. This is the information on the product. This is the catalog item reuse web part. This is an out-of-the-box page, right? So there's number 1. And then the custom shopping cart web part. And then this questionnaire form web part. And we have about 600 items in the catalog right now. And 100 of them have a form where we need additional information on from you on what this is. For example, if you're ordering a laptop that's a replacement, we would need to know the asset tag of the laptop that you're replacing. So we need this additional information. And we plan to use K2 Smart Forms for this, because this will enable an administrative resource to create these forms that then connect to the back end. And then that asset tracking database. So, and you can see that the ID here, this is the ID of this product item. And the item context is, again, from the friendly URL, in this case, ID. And the web parts cross-reference the products list, it's a SharePoint list, for their information on the product. Okay, so we've added our item to the cart. We check out. The cart is just a SharePoint list, right? So, and it's based on the context of the current user. So, and the data persists in the cart if the user logs off. So you can expire the items with a regular information policy if the user hasn't completed the transaction within 30 days, you know, purge it and clear out the cart. Okay, now Raj is going to tell us about how this was built and the product catalog architecture.
Thank you, Denise. Now I'm going to cover the technical aspects of how this was implemented. So before I get into the technical aspects, I want to make sure that we're going to be using the product catalog term and the service catalog term interchangeably throughout this presentation. The service catalog is actually the application we develop, and the product catalog is actually the site template we're actually using. The service catalog, so what we used is a shopping site model. We want users to come into the site, browse for products, either by using the search or by drilling down the category and be able to find their products. So a shopping cart site might support 4 types of views. First, there are users who know what the type of product they want, so they want to be able to get into the site, search for that product, and find it immediately. Then they have the users where they want to find the product, but they're not a specific type of product, so they want to go into the site, drill down the categories, and buy the products, compare the products, and stuff. And then we have the third and the fourth category, which you are actually not concerned about, which because as an internal facing e-commerce site, we deal with only the first two types of users. So based on a study, 35% of the users who come to the site actually know what type of product they want, but not what particular specific product. So say user might be looking for a tablet, but not know what type of tablet he might be wanting. So he should be able to drill down the categories, compare the products, and then place an order. Then we have the 27% who actually know what specific product they want. So they should be able to go to the search page, type in the product name, and find the product. Then there is the rest 38% who just shop for inspiration, maybe deals, and that's basically applies to an external facing e-commerce site. The product catalog. So we want to cover some of the basic components that we leveraged out of the box in SharePoint 2013. They are the site templates, the web paths, term store, product catalog connection, search, and display templates. I'll be covering each of these topics separately in the coming slides. The first one is the site template. In 2013, as Denis said, we have a new site template called the product catalog site template. When you think about the site template, there's nothing special about the product catalog. All it does is lays the groundwork so you can create this site and get started with the product catalog. So we have some pre-created site columns, pre-created content types like products, products with images, pre-created term group, pre-created custom list called products, and then some web parts. So when you think about a product catalog site, the first one is needing a site or a list, a list or a document library to house all our products. So it's going to be the products list, which is already pre-created when you provision the site. Next, we have the columns, the list columns, which is basically defined as site columns in here. So site columns like manufacturer, model, the item category basically applies to all the products. So those are pretty much pre-created for you when you actually create the site. Next, we have the content type. And it actually makes sense to associate each product that we enter into the product catalog with a content type. In this case, it's going to be the product with images, which has a parent content type of products. And then we have a term group, which is basically going to be the container for all the terms, and which is, in our case, it translates to the categories and subcategories. And then we have the web paths, which I'm going to be covering in the next slide. So 2013, we have a few new web paths and some of the old web paths which have been revamped with new features. And these are some of the web paths that we were able to leverage out of the box without actually having to customize or write much of code. The first one is the catalog item reuse web part. A catalog item reuse web part is basically a web part that consumes the data from the search. Basically, when we have the items in the products list, the search crawls, and the data is now available in the search index. What catalog item reuse web part does is basically gets the data from the search index and displays the information. Then we have the popular items and recommended items, which actually leverage the analytics component of the search. So usage pattern of how many times the product was viewed, how many times it was clicked on, and those kind of metrics, and is actually available in the analytics component of search. Next, we have the refinement. Now, the refinement web part, along with the other two web parts, the search box and the search results, give us the whole experience of the search. So the user types in the query in the search box, gets the results in the search results web part, and he's able to refine it. So refinement is basically be manufacturer, so user can refine it by a Microsoft product or a HP product or basically things like that, or probably the item price. Then we have the content search web part, which is the other significant web part, because this web part actually gets the data from the search, but it does a client-side rendering. So when we talk about web parts in 2013, there is a mix of client-side rendering and server-side rendering. Some web parts use client-side rendering, like the content search web part, and the content catalog item reuse web part use the server-side rendering. The reason for using server-side rendering is that whenever an external search engine like Bing crawls our site, it should be able to index items in the the data in our site. The second use of having a server-side rendering is catalog item to use weapon has a function to log all the usage. So whenever user loads a page, all these metrics are automatically logged into the analytics component. Term store. So if you have a few more settings in the term store in 2013, so as I said, when we create the product catalog site collection, it comes with the site collection followed by the URL of the site, which is automatically created. This is a term group. Now, we follow that by creating a term set. The term set is going to house all our categories and subcategories. In our case, it's going to be hardware, software, and all the subcategories under hardware are going to be terms. So we have hardware, we have software. So on the left, if you notice, there is the concept called term-driven pages. As the name implies, the term actually drives the contents in the page. There are two types of pages in here. One is called the target page setting, the target page, and the catalog item page. What the target page is, so when a user goes to the site, clicks on a category, drills down to the subcategory, the user should be able to see all the products. So this page actually drives the content in the page by the context of the term the user is in. So if I'm in laptops, the page actually knows the context that I'm in laptops, retrieves all the data from the search index, and then filters it by laptop. Then the next one is the catalog item page. Again, when the user gets all the products by laptops, clicks on a product, the product should functionally it should take the user to a page with all the information about the product. So that's a catalog item page. This again makes use of the data in the search index. Then we have the concept called faceted navigation. So when you think about filtering items written by the search results, let's take the example for laptops. Laptops might have the certain set of refiners, like the screen size. And there might be another category called cameras. It might have a different set of refiners, like pixels. So faceted navigation enables us to define different set of refiners for each category. So in that case, we can have the top level having all those refiners that's common to all the subcategories, and each individual subcategories having their own set of refiners. Then we have the concept called catalog connection. The simple idea is to have the content in one site collection and to be able to consume the data in another site collection, maybe one or more other site collection. So we have the products list, in our case, in one site collection. The search crawls it. Now the data is available in the search index. Now I can have one or more site collection, maybe in the same web app or a different web app, using the data from the search index, because data was already crawled and available in the search index, and we can use those data in a number of site collections. In our case, we had single site collection where we had the products list, and we can actually consume the data from the same site collection. So the concept is called the cross-site publishing. The list and the libraries, once they are published, they're ready to be crawled by the search engine, and the concept is called the publish enable list and libraries. Search. Now, we leverage, as you saw in the last slides, we leverage a lot of search, and we want to go through some of the key components we used. The first is the concept of ranking. Ranking basically enables the user to define a custom set of metrics based on which the result sets will be sorted. 2013 comes with a default set of ranking model, which we can actually customize. Then we have the query spell correction, where the system actually recognizes any spelling the user makes. Like in this case, the picture to the right, laptops was misspelled. It actually corrects those and recommends those kinds of spelling corrections. Then we have the query rules, which is another important topic. The concept of query rules is the ability to promote the results as just a single result or a set of results when we query using the search. So what we have is we define a condition basically saying when the results should be, the query rule should be activated. So I can say whenever the result contains laptops, activate the query rule. Then the next part is the action. Once it gets activated, what should the query rule do? So basically, I can just promote just a single link, promote a set of links, or reorder the search results. So In this case, I just defined the example of a Black Friday deal, where when the user goes in, types in laptops, as there is a certain set of laptops that basically are on sale on that day would be promoted to the first. And we have the actions in here. I'm just promoting the result. And then there's a concept of the publishing period, where this rule is only activated for a certain period, or it can be activated forever. The next term is called the result types. The concept of result types enables us to have different look and feel for different types of result types. So if I'm having a result type with documents, have a different look and feel. If I have a result type with just products, as we will see in the next slides, I will have a different look and feel. The concept of it combines the query rules with the properties, and we apply different display templates. And then we go to the next topic called the display templates itself. So the concept here is, in 2010, whenever we have to change the look and feel for a web part, basically we override the web part, create our custom solution, basically end up creating our custom web parts. In 2013, we don't have to do that. Basically, all the web parts have the settings to use the different display templates. All we do is define a custom display template and ask the web part to use those custom display template. And that way, the look and feel can be changed without having to write our custom solutions. So, then we have the search refinement. This basically goes back to the concept of phased navigation, except in this case, it doesn't apply to a particular category or term. It applies to the whole set of results. Then we have the query suggestions, where user goes in, begins typing in a query, and we can basically direct the user to narrow down their options. In our case, I started typing in the laptops, and it ultimately recognizes it and suggests me either it's a business laptop or a developer laptop. Managed property and crawl property. So when we publish a list, all the data in the list columns need to be crawl properties for search to be able to crawl them. So once we publish it, the concept of publishing automatically enables the site columns to be made as crawl properties. Then what we do is either go to the central admin or in the site collection, create some managed properties, and map those managed properties to the crawl, map those crawl properties to the managed properties. And once we do this, as we'll see later, managed properties can be used pretty much in every different site collection. We can call the data by the managed property name, use it in our display templates, or pretty much everything. So we have the central admin, where we have the managed property. We have the option to create the new managed property. As you'll see, we have the crawl property that's mapped to the managed property. These are the sets of crawl properties that's available to us. Then we have the concept of search and refiners. And this page has the whole search experience, where we have the three web parts. As we discussed, we have the search box, the search results, and the refinement. User types in the query in the search box, gets the results. As we see, this is an out-of-the-box display template. I'll have a video, which basically shows you how to customize the display templates and get your own look and feel. The display templates. So basically, display templates are just HTML files. In 2010, we have the concept of master page, page layouts. And this model is basically extended with the concept of display templates. So each item, when we consider the content search web part, each result is considered as an item template. So each item template associates itself with a display template, and that's how we basically had this UI. Each of the data in this UI was actually pulled in from the products list through the search index, and again, that's the concept of having managed property defined, having a flexible search schema, we are able to define it. So going back to the topic, display templates are just HTML files. So create a copy of the default display template, customize the HTML tags, add your own inline CSS, maybe Java query, jQuery, JavaScript, or anything. So this video is actually going to show us how. So this is the customized look and feel. We have the product. When we go back to the other slide, we just had the title and probably link. What we did is customize it, look and feel, added an image. This image is basically pulled out from the products list. So we have the title and basically a description, and these products don't have a description, so. So all the display templates are housed in the master page and page layouts. So we go to the master page and page layouts, there's a separate folder called the display templates. Go into the folder and we'll see all the list of display templates in there. As I said, we have all the lists of display templates. We have the HTML files and the JS files. Basically, the JS files are associated with the HTML files. So we don't actually edit the JS file directly. We create or edit the HTML file, and the JS file automatically gets refreshed. So what I did is there are two ways of customizing the display template. One is using the Design Manager. Another is using this WebDAV. So I use the WebDAV, which is basically pretty easy. As you can see, the last four items, United Search Template, United Test Search Template, these were the two display templates we were working with. So I opened the HTML file. As you can see, it has JavaScript coming out, the HTML. As you can see, on line 60, we have the title. Basically, what I'm trying to do is have a added static text in here and refresh the page, it should actually reflect the changes I just made. Oops. So I'm just adding in static text, saving the file. The JavaScript file automatically gets refreshed. Now I refresh the page. Now I can see the results in here. The title is concatenated with the static text that I just added. So it's pretty much easy. You can actually associate the display template to a web part, or there is a concept called result types, where we associate a specific result type to a specific display template. Now, Dennis is going to talk about the collaboration and social strategy.
Okay, thank you, Raj. Okay, so now we have this new great service catalog application for United. So how do we tell people about it, right? So we have, this is 2010. This is our portal site. This is a portal homepage, and this is branding that Raj did some great work on. And this is one-stop shopping, right? So this is the focal point you can navigate and search to what you're looking for. We talked about the site provisioning, and so we populate the division, the org chart hierarchy, for example, with the site provisioning. When we provision a site, it goes on this list, which is a sitemap. And so we build out the hierarchy that same way. And then project sites also go on a list. Again, site provisioning, you need to, you know, you can search for things, but you also need to navigate to them. Our portal sites, these are for C-level officers like CIO, CFO, officers, VPs, managing directors. These are publishing sites. So these have a limited audience, limited contributors, the VP and maybe his or her admin and person on the SharePoint team for tech support. And everyone in United Airlines can read, right? This is a portal site, a publishing site. This is a team site. This is where we do all our work. This is team calendar. This is all of our documents. This is where, you know, we work on our stuff together and we collaborate. These have Active Directory security groups at the managing director level. We establish those, and so everyone on the team can contribute to the site. It's not a magazine like the portal sites. This is a working site, a collaboration site. These are our 2010 My Sites, and we populate all these pictures from Active Directory. And this our 2010 My Sites are planned around the upgrade path to 2013, because there is so much good stuff coming in 2013 that we're going to 2013 for social as quickly as possible. This is the 2013 wiki, which I'm a huge fan of, and in one of the sessions, Microsoft says they didn't make a huge investment in this, but it's significant enough to make this so much easier to use, and this is the out-of-the-box look and feel, and it's just super easy to use. So this is, we went to a 2013 wiki almost immediately, and this is a SharePoint 2010 training site, but it's hosted on a 2013 wiki because it's so easy to use. This is 2013 social, and we get such great advantages in social. You all saw the keynote. I mean, this is really good stuff, and it's really easy to use. Our RDP project was the service catalog, but I thought I wanted to show you guys 2013 social, and so we did this in an hour. I pinged people who were online, and I said, hey, you know, sign up for this group, join, post a comment, and so we did the next two slides that you're going to see in just an hour. It's so easy to use. So hashtagging is supported in 2013 as well. So for example, can you predefine all the hashtags that your users are going to need? There's no way. So for example, a hashtag watching for, hashtag approaching Hurricane Sandy. I mean, how would you know that? You wouldn't know that, right? So this is the opposite of ECM, right? The FAA requires us to keep aircraft records for 7 years past the date of the last use of the aircraft. We have to, on an enterprise content management, provide the list of aircraft types for our users. We have to predefine that. The social is the opposite. So it's a sliding scale from, you know, dynamic and responsive and agile to, you know, we have to, there are government regulations that we have to respond to. So there's governance and then there's, you know, social. But social becomes a part of the fabric of the enterprise where then it ties everything together and we can better leverage those documents that we're creating and collaborate and share that information. And social is in the United Airlines Go Forward plan. It's definitely on our roadmap as a corporation, as an enterprise. So 2013, these are communities. This is something we did not have in 2010. We can, just like hashtags, we can scope this to, we can bring the familiar social tools, meaning Facebook and Twitter and Yammer, inside the corporate environment, right? Because we do have governance. We have to sort of control the message. It's monitor, right? So it's viral. We do have a United Airlines Yammer community, and it's so easy to use, and this is that easy to use. Again, we created this in 1 hour, so we're bringing those tools inside the corporate environment, right? And it's, you email 5 people, hey, join this group, and the next day 60 people have joined. They tell 2 friends, and they tell 2 friends, and that's how it works. So we don't really have internet connectivity, so what I'm going to do is, I created this little Camtasia video of our social thing. So Raj has it live. Hold on, I'm just gonna show this video. Again, this is what we created. Whoa, okay, so we're not gonna, so I vote for Raj's, That was weird. I wonder if the... Oh, that's better. Okay, go Raj. All right. So this is a little Camtasia video of what we created in an hour. And you can see the airport operations community there. I joined that, created that community, and then I promote that community. And I'm showing more posts. It's a news feed, right? And then, so here are the fundamental principles of, or the components of 2013 social, the SkyDrive Pro, right? And here are some Boeing 787 pictures that I posted. Sites I'm following, I don't have to remember the URL. And so you follow a site and it goes onto your sites list. That's huge to me. This is the airport operations community that we built in just a few minutes. And then we start to collaborate here and share ideas. And all this is tied together in that news feed, in your team sites. So thank you, Raj. Excellent. Okay, so hopefully. So what I'm going to show next is we filmed a video with Microsoft in Chicago a couple weeks ago, and this is a retrospective of what we're doing with SharePoint at United Airlines in a minute and 16 seconds. So hopefully, if this plays correctly, we'll show it here.
We're working very hard to make United Airlines the best airline in the world. We have an unparalleled route infrastructure. We've got the 787 coming on board. We have the features our customers want and the destinations they want to go. SharePoint was brought in for a very specific solution to help us with a content management problem. We blinked, and the user community started developing all these wonderful business applications on top of the platform.
We started with SharePoint in 2007 with one targeted application. It grew to be an enterprise platform for ECM and e-discovery. SharePoint became a tier one application where we are co-locating about 1 terabyte of content for the enterprise. With 2013, the folks who run the service catalog are able to reduce the current time it takes to add an item to the catalog from 2 months to hours. This is a service that we provide to 87,000 users, which allows them to search or navigate to the products and services that they need from the technology department.
SharePoint allows us to build communities at United Airlines around the products and services that we want to deliver to our customers.
Okay, and just a quick note of thanks to Brian Culver, SharePoint Master. He was instrumental in making this project a reality and outstanding efforts. Thank you so much, Brian. Thank you. And to Microsoft for their incredible support of this rapid deployment project effort. It was a great learning experience. And we're taking this production, right? So it's good for the company. It was a great partnership. So thank you very much to Brian and to Microsoft for making this possible. Thank you so much for your interest, and we appreciate your joining us today. And we welcome any questions that we can answer. Yes. Any external content types? In terms of, so we use the product catalog content types that they give us. In this particular project?
We haven't experimented with the external content types. At this point, we are making a proof of concept for end-to-end. So we are certainly open to those things. But at this point, we haven't worked with the external content types.
Yes. Here. Yes. Okay. So yes. The question is, do we have on-prem SharePoint on-prem? Yes, we have Yammer in the cloud. It's just the regular, it's just Yammer in the cloud, and so it's not integrated in any way yet, but there is a United Airlines community on Yammer, right? So we're bringing. Okay, so excellent question. And so we're looking to Microsoft for the roadmap, kind of that we've seen in some of the sessions. So there's great interest in Yammer because of the ease of use, but the social tools in 2013 that we're seeing are also that easy to use. And so it's going to be an evolving process where we work with the user community. I mean, there are some examples of large corporations that have used Yammer in the cloud, and they have governance and sort of code of conduct and things like that. So we're working through that to try to get the best mix of those tools. Go ahead. So the question is, how many people make up our SharePoint team? So We have 11 resources that are dedicated to SharePoint. We have additional application support people, and then we have projects like our environmental projects. So we have some consultants who help us on with those projects. So about 17 people. It's centralized, well, between our Chicago headquarters and Houston. So, yeah, it's a relatively small team for what we're doing, because it's, you know, it's agile, it's easy to use, it's and the model that we use is that it's distributed, right? We provision these sites for the users, and then they create great things, right? So, and then we support them when we have a power user in each department, division, and then, you know, and then they roll up to the, you know, level 2 application support, and then level 3 the engineering team, and then all on up from there. Yes. 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 Are we using the content type hub? Yes. 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 Yes, we have to. So we want to, and our CIO has expressed that it's very important that this is a grassroots effort that's not, it's not top down, it's bottom up. But then again, it has to be governed. And I mean, we have a, you know, working together policy, principles of dignity and respect, and things that you can post or shouldn't post. And so, you know, you can have those tools externally. And users will put it on, you know, outside the company on Facebook or whatever. Or you can bring those tools inside the company when you can start to manage that a little bit. So, but we don't want to we want to encourage the users to communicate. And I one managing director made the statement. I was so encouraged to hear this, and some of the question and answer on those portal sites. Ask Bob, ask Tom, and he says, we're going to hear questions we don't want to hear, but we have to address them. We have to answer it. So it's that feedback loop. It's that, you know, open communication. We will, and that's very important, the analytics, the metrics, to sort of see what's working, see what's not working, you know, if someone builds a community sort of it with information policy, you know, 30 days, 3 months, it will go away, something's used or not used. Yeah, so that's important. Yes? Sure. There's never enough training. I mean, just there's just not, right? So, so basically, we have CBTs, we have online training, we have a dedicated application support group and a SharePoint ticketing system, and so that we can track, again, metrics and analytics. We can track, you know, what we're seeing and what the questions are, so that we can tailor our training for that item. And so there's level zero is what I call it, which is the power user in the division or the department. They call it the service desk, which is our help desk. And then if they can't answer their question, they have the top 10 items or whatever. And then it rolls up to, you know, level 2 application support, and then on up to, you know, where until we can answer the question. Great question. Thank you. Go ahead. So just so you know, that security is the number one topic on the SharePoint support list. It's, you know, it's complex, right? So item level security is complicated. I mean, 2013 gives us better tools. It's more user friendly. Like, you have give the users read or let them edit, I think is what the menu says. And so, you know, there's an administrative component to it. So again, the Active Directory security groups, we try to define it with AD security groups because it's easier to manage. And that, so it depends on the type of site. Are you talking specifically about the product catalog? Well, that's open to everyone in the company, right? So they would have contribute rights. And so, and then your, you know, shopping cart is scoped to your user context. And so it's on a, you know, site collection level, but it's based on And everyone has contribute rights because they have to create a you know, purchase an item. And yes. Yes. So Raj has something
and
to add.
The other thing is we don't have to have those the application and the data on the same site collection. We have mm-hmm. we can have the data on one site collection, and the user don't have to have access to that because it's already crawled by search and it's in the search index. So when we build the application on another site collection, all the user has to have is access to that site collection. So that way the data is kept separately, the application is separate, and there are different security levels between them.
That's an excellent point. Thank you. Yes, question right here. Yeah, go ahead. Yes. Excellent question. Yes, we do, and that's very important. We had that in 2007, and we updated it for 2010, and then we'll, you know, extend it to 2013. So where did the business...
who owns your governance?
Yes. Yes, it's owned by IT, but, I mean, in partnership with the business, right? So, so because the business owns the content, because our legal record retention policy says that, you know, aircraft records are owned by that group, right? So they it's a partnership. We define the policy in concert with our executive leadership, and then, you know, the businesses manage the content according to the legal record retention rules. Great question. Go ahead, sir. Of course, yes, they will be on the SharePoint conference site, and it will be the video and the slides.
It will be out in 48 hours.
48 hours. It will be available in 48 hours. Any other questions? All right. Okay, yes, go ahead. Say again. You're looking at him. Brian, Raj, and myself, and Microsoft. And we really started working on this in earnest in, what, like July?
July.
Something like
July.
That. End of July. And, you know, because we were building Beta 1, Beta 2, RC, and then RTM. This is, you're looking at RTM. So, you know, 3 months. And that's everything, including having to upgrade the version of the bits and things like that. So it's pretty, once you get the framework established, it's pretty, like the demos that Raj showed you, it's pretty pretty easy to sort of manage and configure the catalog client side, you know, the display templates and all that. And that's one of the main benefits is that once you get that established, then you know it's just SharePoint list item. A new product is new item, and you know an administrative resource can enter that item in the catalog. So, great question. Other questions? Yes. That's a really good question. So there's formal communication, you know, like that top-down communication that we're talking about. The portal sites give us some of that top-down, you know, the CIO's magazine and all that. So there's top-down. We have formal, you know, emails, a daily news update email that goes out to the company. So there's a lot of formal communication. But then the social gives us that sort of, you know, framework to do the ad hoc communication, especially that the sort of grassroots ground up effort for the employees to communicate. And that's really what our executive leadership has asked us to do, is provide a platform to allow the employees to drive it. So we have the top down communication, and then we have the, you know, the social, which comes from working together with the employees. So that's an excellent question. So you know, we have our Active Directory security groups, and we can you know invite people to join a community or things like that. So you can, SharePoint allows you to do it either way. You can say, you know, please join this group, or just through social mechanisms and seeing it in your news feed, hey, I want to go join that group. So you can do it either way, and it depends on the model you want to use. Great question. Thank you. Anything else? All right, well, thank you so much for